and thanks to y'all for joining this call. I'm Rob McCulloch, Senior Policy and Legislative Advocate for the Blue-Green Alliance, and the Obama administration's efforts to make vehicles more efficient isn't just good for the environment, it's also good for American jobs. Today's call will feature Blue-Green Alliance Executive Director David Foster and Gary Guzzi, the Deputy Director for the White House Council on Environmental Quality. They'll be discussing the importance of the light-duty fuel efficiency standards, and at three hearings across the country last month, the Blue-Green Alliance, our partners, and allies spoke out in support of these important policies, and because of people like you, those of you on the call, these hearings were a huge success. So now let's hear from our moderator, David Foster. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Rob. This is David Foster. The Blue-Green Alliance, as all of you on the phone know, is a national strategic partnership between 12 of America's largest labor unions and environmental organizations with over 14 million members dedicated to expanding the number and quality of jobs in the green economy. Welcome to all of you on this important call. The Blue-Green Alliance has been proud to support the new 54.5 mile per gallon fuel efficiency standard for cars and light-duty trucks. And we're also very pleased to have with us today Gary Guzzi, the Deputy Director of the White House Council on Environmental Quality, and to thank him for his support and hard work in advocating these important job-creating standards. The Obama administration has moved our country forward with these historic vehicle efficiency standards, which nearly doubled the current new car standard, and are among the biggest steps this administration has undertaken to reduce oil use and greenhouse gas pollution. But as historic as the standards themselves are, the support they've garnered from industry, environmental, and labor organizations and consumer rights groups is just as important. When the new standard for model year 2025 was announced last summer, it received broad support from 13 automakers, the United Auto Workers, and many other unions. The state of California, which, as you know, has had its own independent fuel efficiency standards for some time, and, of course, countless environmental organizations. Combined with the current light-duty vehicle standards, the new program is estimated to save 12 billion barrels of oil, equivalent to nearly 4 years of current light-duty vehicle oil consumption. Meanwhile, nearly 600 billion metric tons of carbon dioxide pollution will be averted, equivalent to 1 year of current U.S. levels. And equally importantly, 200,000 new auto worker jobs will be created in a retooled all-American auto industry. So we're here today to thank you, Gary, and also all the labor, environmental, and industry advocates on the phone who worked so hard to make our vision of an American economy that creates both good jobs and a clean environment a reality in 2012. And now I'll turn the phone over to Gary Guzzi, Deputy Director of the White House Council on Environmental Quality. Gary?
Well, thank you so much, Dave. And let me start out by really thanking the Blue-Green Alliance and your partners and those who are on the phone for all of the work that you have done to help make this proposed standards and our ability to finalize them a reality. The essential, I think, insight that the Blue-Green Alliance had from the very beginning, that we could promote a strong U.S. economy by innovating and protecting the environment, was absolutely central to getting this effort done. And this effort, I think, serves as a premier demonstration of what the potential is for our country. So we're hugely excited about it, both because of what it represents in general and because of what it represents on the ground and the kind of, I think, success that we're seeing. Now, when the Obama administration went into this effort, we recognized that there was enormous potential on both of those fronts, on the national security, reducing greenhouse gases, promoting jobs, increasing American innovation and manufacturing and protecting the environment. All of those fronts just seemed to align. And so what we tried to do was something that was quite ambitious. We tried to do something that was far-reaching and that would be enduring and sort of set us on a path for the future. And the only way I think we were able to do that was by building alliances, by doing an enormous amount of outreach, and by getting the creativity and support from Blue-Green Alliance and its partners. And, you know, the kinds of innovations that we try to do, putting together different regulatory schemes, the Department of Transportation and EPA into a cohesive mix, creating a single national standard that would integrate different state standards led by California and making sure they were part of the conversation. Doing something that looks far into the future. These are standards that, when they take effect, will run through 2025, with the idea being that given the fundamental investments that the industry needs to make to be able to give life to technological innovation, a range of alternative technologies, that the industry really needed the certainty of a long-term regulatory framework so that it could make those investments that would be required. Being able to incent innovation so that, in fact, there are a range of flexibilities and incentives that we try to build into this proposal that help to promote deploying fuel-efficient technologies and things like the pickup trucks that so many Americans use for their work, advanced technologies, a range of plug-in hybrids and electric vehicles, and flexibility, so that this is a proposal that preserves consumer choice, but that helps companies come up with fuel-efficient alternatives and fuel-efficient approaches that will meet the needs of American consumers. So what we did was we sat down literally with every company. We sat down with the unions. We sat down with the environmental community. We sat down with the states. And we sat down with consumer groups and really got ideas on what was possible and where we could push the envelope. And it was that combination of ideas that made for, I think, a far stronger approach in the end, one that was able to actually meet all of those requirements and be something that could be supported by such a broad group. And really, at the end of the day, helps to promote a resurgence of U.S. leadership. You know, I was proud to join, I think, five of the cabinet secretaries who were out at the opening of the North American International Auto Show, the Detroit Auto Show, a few weeks ago. And there were 27 different product introductions there, with U.S. companies clearly leading the way in the kind of innovation around fuel efficiency and smart technology and great drivability and great products and the consequent reflecting U.S. leadership and jobs that will result from that effort. So it was, I think, an enormously exciting and really gratifying event to see. And, you know, these standards, when they're finalized and they're put in place, these are things that are going to save consumers real dollars at the pump. They'll save car owners and vehicle owners over the life of their cars a significant amount of money. They'll save our country an enormous amount of oil, allowing us to, in fact, import less. And they will be ones that serve us enormously well for a very long time. Dave went through some of the statistics, but, you know, the combined programs that we're talking about save us overall some 12 billion barrels of oil a year, reduce our greenhouse gases. You know, when we look at this target of 54.5 miles per gallon fleet-wide average in 2025, this is something that at the end of the day I think we collectively can all be really proud of and you know, really take a great deal of pride in U.S. leadership on being able to achieve. And you know, this is the single largest step any country is actually making in reducing their carbon greenhouse gas pollution. It's also, I think, the single greatest innovation and investment in clean vehicle technology that we'll see that it's being promoted by this. for that reason, I think we're really gratified by all the work that folks have done in the field to explain it, in the rooms here in Washington to help us devise an approach that really is something that's both workable and pushes the envelope at the same time. So, Dave, thanks to you and your team, as well as the other members of the Alliance and those who are on the call, for all that you've done.
Great. Thank you very much, Gary. And I've been gathering some questions here online to ask you. But before I get into them, I just want to share with people likewise how important I think this accomplishment was when we were at the International Climate Talks last December and were able to do a program at the State Department Pavilion about these new auto rules. And it really drove home to me the importance in the international arena of demonstrating that the United States is following through on the pledge it took to reduce carbon emissions, even without legislation accomplishing that in a comprehensive fashion through a series of regulatory steps. And as you said, this is the largest single step that any country has taken since the Copenhagen UN climate change talks, and one of which I think you and the administration and all of us who worked on it have a lot to be proud of. So, again, our thanks to you and to the administration for their work in following through. Now, I have a question from Tiffany in Muskegon, Michigan, and she asks from the heart of auto country, how will these standards help the auto industry continue its resurgence?
Well, there are, thank you, Tiffany, for the question. There are a range of ways in which it will. I mean, you know, just the ability of consumers to have more money in their pocket at the end of the day because they're not pulling up to the pump with fuel prices being what they are and having to spend nearly as much money helps to facilitate more sales for the industry. And I think the industry has really recognized the benefit of that and the importance of that while still preserving consumer choice. And, you know, one of the things that the industry really recognized is that it can be leaders in building great cars with a huge variety of drivetrains, some that are conventional technology but really optimized, and some that are alternative and new kinds of technology, and that there's a tremendous market for that, and there's a tremendous market for export of that U.S. technology so that with jobs at home, we're producing for the world as well. And that's, I think, an enormous benefit to the industry. And then the last piece that I'd add is, this provides the industry with the regulatory certainty that they absolutely and really need to be successful. So rather than having a variety of federal programs that they'd have to meet, and rather than having a combination of different federal and state standards, we were able to harmonize the kinds of standards that there would be into a single national standard that the states would be satisfied with. And thereby avoiding the difficulty of having to build, you know, one fleet for California and a bunch of other states and another fleet for other states, all of which becomes very costly to the industry and confusing to the industry and tough to plan for. And that was, I think, for the industry, the most significant piece of this in some ways, which was both the certainty over time that this provides and the certainty on building for a single national fleet. And that, I think, gives them an enormous amount of comfort and an ability to make the investments that help to transition the industry and help them to be successful.
Great. And now we have a question from Rob in Washington. Do you believe these significant improvements in fuel efficiency will make American-made vehicles sell better in overseas markets?
Absolutely, and we heard that from so many of the companies who we spoke with and so many of the union representatives who we spoke with, that, you know, that U.S. Technology is looked to throughout the world, but that gasoline prices are enormously high in lots of countries and much higher than in the United States throughout much of the world. And so those kinds of choices that consumers have to make when they decide what kind of vehicle to buy, they are in many areas of the world driven to incredibly or very highly fuel efficient cars. And to be able to have American products that satisfy those needs, I think will be a significant change and a significant improvement. And to have U.S. companies leading the way in that is really something of which we all can be proud and is vital for promoting U.S. manufacturing and the industry's economic recovery.
Yes, it's great to see the American auto industry leading again in a way that it did when I was a kid. That's one of the most exciting parts of what we've accomplished. In the start of your remarks, you mentioned that this success in auto is something we should learn from. And our next question comes from Jason in Tallahassee, Florida, who's asking, where does the administration go from here in terms of reducing carbon emissions? How do we learn from the success in auto?
Well, there are a range of steps, Jason, that the administration continues. And let me just say that what we've done so far on the vehicle side is actually a proposed rule. And the participation of so many of your members in the hearings throughout the country that are the sort of information gathering that will allow EPA and the Department of Transportation to finalize this effort next summer is critical. So continuing to support the effort so that it can be finalized is sort of a first step and very important. We have a number of other important domestic steps that are underway. The president, has been clear from day one that a clean energy transformation in this country is absolutely vital to a sustainable economy, so that his budget continues to propose critical investments in renewable energy, in innovation and research, that are all designed at the end of the day will have the benefit of helping to reduce carbon emissions. And then we continue on with a range of important international activities through both bilateral work on technology transfer, through multilateral work through groups like the Major Economies Forum, and then through international organizations, through things like the international climate negotiations, to try and put in place a responsible framework for the reduction globally of carbon emissions. So it's really a multi-pronged strategy that we're talking about, both at the at the on-the-ground national level, and including a number of important steps that the Environmental Protection Agency is taking around emissions from power plants that are a vital piece of this as well. And then the on the international front, in a cooperative manner, looking to develop a responsible and appropriate approach to the framework for reducing carbon emissions.
Thank you. And next we have a question from Brenda in Hastings, Mississippi. And she asks, what will these fuel efficiency standards do to the price of cars? And if there's an increase in that price, will it be offset by the savings in gas? Did you study that question?
Yeah, there's a lot of information in the public docket that EPA and the Department of Transportation have put out around the potential impact of, these standards on costs. And remember, one of the challenges that we have in putting standards like this together is we're projecting out through the year 2025. So There's not absolute precision, but I think that we know that nothing comes for free, and that there are some costs that are associated with the range of strategies that companies are likely to deploy to meet these standards. But in every instance we found, they are significantly offset by the savings that consumers will see during the use of their vehicle and over the lifetime of that vehicle. And our estimate is that that there's a net lifetime savings of from $3,000 to $4,000 per vehicle. $3,000 to $4,400 per vehicle that will result from these standards. And what we heard from a number of consumer organizations and the companies is that most people finance cars over an increasingly long period of time. And so under many of these scenarios, the end result is from day one, lower monthly payments because of those reduced operating costs, those reduced fuel costs that people will see. And that's putting money in consumers' pockets. That's a very good thing.
That's great. Next, we have a question comes from my home state of Minnesota, from Eric in Springfield. You mentioned early on in your remarks about the flexibility of the rules. Maybe you could talk a little bit more about how these standards work, and does it mean all cars have to get 54.5 miles per gallon by 2025, and will the standards force all cars to be electric or hybrids? Exactly what level of flexibility is there?
Yeah, our goal in developing these was to come up with an enormously flexible approach. So the 54.5 mile per gallon 2025 target is a target for a fleet-wide average that doesn't really reflects that as companies sell, market, develop, and sell these fleets, they'll be selling a range of vehicles. And these are the proposals for what's known as attribute-based standards. Not to get too technical, but the recognition is that, different vehicles have to do different things. And so if you're buying a small vehicle, it can be more fuel efficient than if you're buying a significant truck that at the end of the day is, used for hauling a lot of work items and has to have that hauling or towing capacity. So the goal was to develop an approach that didn't affect either the range of choices that consumers have in vehicles or the capability of those vehicles. And to do that, we recognize that there's not a single emissions level that every vehicle can meet, but that there's a range across the fleet, and what we wanted to do was drive constant improvement across that range. So there is a differentiation between passenger cars and light-duty trucks, pickup trucks, in the targets. And there's a annual rate of improvement that all vehicles need to meet under this proposal that gets to that fleet average of 54.5 miles per gallon by the end of the period. And it's really the coming together of those two, the differentiation and that continued level of improvement that yields the end result. And, what we wanted to do was to be able to incent a whole range of technologies, but to leave it to the companies to figure out what their strategy might be for meeting that target. And I think one of the really sort of exciting, cool things about this is that there are companies who are developing pure battery electric vehicles, plug them in, no gasoline whatsoever. There are others who are developing plug-in hybrids where you plug them in and the battery gets recharged and it's highly efficient and you only use gas a very small part of the time or when you want to go really far. There are others who are doing hybrid that assists the drive in a whole range of ways, and being able to deploy that across things like the pickup truck fleet or in novel applications. There are others who are doing really sort of interesting things like the vents on the front of the cars that lead to the engines that close at the highway, where you don't have to be worried so much about cooling to improve aerodynamics, or lighting that saves fuel efficiency, or solar panels on the roof that help to charge up the car. All sorts of kind of innovations that I expect that we'll begin to see or are now seeing on the road that are incented through this. And that's, I think, one of the most exciting things, which is we expect that at the end of the day, the president has stated a goal of having a million electric vehicles on the road by 2015. And at the end of the day, this is we will likely see a proliferation of different kinds of drivetrains, different kinds of vehicles with all sorts of advanced technology that helps companies to be able to meet these standards and offers consumers an enormous range of choices.
Great, Gary. I think we have time for one last quick question. We hear a lot of complaints these days about America's dependence on foreign oil. Hillary from Pittsburgh wants to know, isn't this fuel efficiency drive the quickest way to solve that problem?
Yeah, I mean, this is really the single greatest step that we'll take in that direction. And, our estimate is that by 2025, that these standards will reduce oil consumption by an estimated 2.2 million barrels a day. Now, that, just to give you some sense of that, that's more oil than we import from any country other than Canada. So, I mean, this is something that helps to promote U.S. energy security. It's a vital part of being able to do that. You sort of look at the aggregate levels of oil that get reduced. Over the life of the program, the estimate is that this will save 12 billion barrels of oil. And that's, the equivalent of about 4 years' worth of consumption by light-duty vehicles at their current level. And to give you some picture of that, it's a huge contributor to our energy security and really a very important step for the country.
Great. Thank you so much, Gary, and thanks to all of your colleagues at the White House Council on Environmental Quality. We appreciate the work you're doing. This was a great success, and we'll be out there promoting these rules and making sure they become the adopted law of the land. Again, thank you very much, Gary Guzzi, Deputy Director of the White House Council on Environmental Quality. Thank you.
Thank you, Dave. Much appreciated.